Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. It's A Good Story is a Good Story, and it's Marcia Cook. And today we have a special guest, Craig Clyde, and it's going to be a great show. This is not our usual show. This is a special edition on Saturday because on Sunday, Craig Clyde has a movie on Hallmark, and I've known him for years. And so I'm going to just bring him right on because we'll talk to him, and then if I have any messages for what's on next week, I'll let you know. But right now, hi, Craig. How are you?
Hi. How are you?
Hi. My favorite guest to have on. I don't need any notes because I know you.
How's the weather in Chicago? We just got dumped.
Cloudy yeah. And dark. What about you?
We just had a snowstorm go through.
You did?
Got about 5 inches on my lawn.
Really? What happens in the next day? It just gets better. I mean,
yeah,
like
it'll
Chicago
be fine with
safe.
Us, but I think you're going to get the storm.
Really?
Yeah.
This is too early for me. I hate it. Everybody says, "Like, where are you from?" I said, "I am from Chicago, but I still don't have to like the weather. I just can't."
Yeah,
it's
the coldest place I've ever been besides San Francisco is Chicago.
You think so? Well, it is. The wind is. You know,
Lake
somebody.
Michigan,
because somebody asked me. They said, "You know, how is the weather?" And she said, "You know, we were like living here for years, and I don't remember being like this windy. I mean, we have, like, a lot, I mean, windier than it ever was. That Michigan Avenue was always windy in the city in Chicago. But the summers, but now it's really windy. So, but, you know what, I'm happy if there's no snow. I like to look at it, especially, like, in your movies. You have a, this is a Christmas
well, we got
movie
dumped
for
on
you.
Movie.
This is so exciting. I mean, I know you for years. You were actually my second client, and I remember the story that some people have heard this because I always say it. I go, after you sent it to me, I go, like, why are you sending this to me? You know, because you are so good. And it was, like, shocking. And since then, we have become friends all these years. It's, like, a lot of time. I think, like, 15 years.
Yeah,
and,
it's been a while.
Yes, and we've both done a lot of different things, but you have really been shining. I mean, if anybody wants to go look him up, and I'll have his information on, you know, on the movie-based data. I mean, you have your writer, director, producer. I mean, you've done it all.
And started out as an actor.
That's exactly right. You've done everything. And PR, you were marketing, you had a show.
Yep. I was in broadcast television and radio for quite a while. Had to reinvent myself, essentially, when I got into this business. And, you know, that's tough for anybody. I mean, you look at yourself and think, gee, I could be a writer maybe or do a film. And, of course, everybody feels that way at one time. Actually doing it, though, is a very difficult road.
And finishing the project. I mean, you know, starting is one thing, but finishing.
I'm always surprised at how many, and I mentor a lot of young writers now, how many of them have finished one screenplay and they get upset because it didn't sell.
I know.
I had to write 25, I think, before I even got my first one done.
And you rewrite. See, that's what they don't understand.
Oh, all the time.
You are, I do say this, you are like the king of rewriting. I mean, you really do rewrite. I mean, you rewrite, rewrite, and rewrite.
Yeah, well, writing is rewriting, I think. This is my office phone going off, but I'm going to let it go.
Okay, we know you're busy.
it's just Saturday. Rewriting is the name of the business. People don't realize that. Everybody thinks, well, I got through it, it must be done. And it really isn't done until it's getting ready to be shot.
Right.
And I always tell people there are three movies you make. The one you write, the one you shoot, and then the one you edit. For example, this one was originally called Root Beer Christmas. We shot it a year ago. And it was just a little late to get into Hallmark. And we were thinking of perhaps going on a limited theatrical release. But that's very difficult.
Yes.
And I have sold to Hallmark before, and I've directed a number of pictures have been there, and Lifetime. So they offered us a very nice slot for this year. So tomorrow night is the best.
It's great. It's really
Yeah, right
time.
Before Thanksgiving. Because after that is all the glut of Christmas movies.
But you know what, though? But everybody loves them. I mean, as a writer, I know, in Hollywood, you know how it is. They go, oh, this is predictable. Well, of course it's predictable. We want a happy ending for Christmas, you know. And everybody likes those feel-good movies, whether they say so or not, you know. And Hallmark does a lot of them. But you are now in the top, because this is when it's starting now. Right now is, like, Like Sunday is when it all starts, right before Thanksgiving, all of these movies. And there's a lot of people that love these movies. And so you got a good slot. This is great. I'm happy.
Yeah, 8 o'clock and then replays at 10. I'm not sure where it'll be in all the time zones, but
in Chicago I checked, it's 7 here. It's 7 o'clock here, but it's gonna be on several times during the week.
Right, right. Yeah.
And
they
I'm sure it'll be on
that.
After that. It'll be on after that for sure.
And then it'll be in their Hallmark stores probably by Christmas.
Now, is Lifetime having your other movie on from last, that they play every year?
I don't know. It's called The Family Holiday. They usually play it, so they may do it again.
Well, because, you know, they don't do as many movies as they did, so they have a lot of shows on. But usually they start, you know, I used to watch it every weekend continuously, but they don't have as many movies as they did. And so I think that one of the problems is we don't know when it's going to, you know, what's going to be. But they will start saying probably Christmas, you know how they do that Christmas countdown? I think they'll probably do that again. They have a loyal audience. And as many times as I've seen a lot of these movies, I still watch them again for Christmas.
Well, I do too. And, you know, they're kind of evergreen. They tend to get a lot of people interested. And people just like you, they like Christmas movies.
Yeah. I love them. Right, because they're very exciting. And hopefully you and I are going to write a new one.
That's
the one thing.
That would be very
fun.
We're
going to try
to
do
one
together.
You ought to tell them that you and I optioned a script together.
Yes, we did. And we hope it goes, you know, and I should say, and this is true, the truth of the matter is I don't know if I would be in this because I just think that I've learned so much from you. We have not met each other personally. We have talked. We used to talk a lot
more. Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And we – and – so I've written scripts, and you've revised them. And what the thing about when you revise it is because you know what a script is supposed to be like when it's ready to shoot. So then it's done, basically, and then they can do it again, but it's really done when you rewrite it.
I don't know how many people know this, but if you, for example, sell a script to a production company or even a studio, by the time a director gets on and the producers – when they talk about development, you know, this script leave that I'm scheduled to direct next year, I've done for the producers, and it's a big producer. Jonathan Crane is a big producer. He's done all the Travolta movies. He's produced those. I've been through 15 page one rewrites, as we call them in the business, with that. I mean, it's just taken forever. They originally brought me on just to fix the script. And that's interesting. That's a whole life in itself, fixing other people's scripts.
Oh, yes.
And then
it's hard because, you know, I mean, you come up, like when you're writing a movie, you come up with the characters and whatever. But then when there's somebody else's characters, I mean, I've always felt like for me, when you've come in with my characters, you knew them.
Oh, yeah.
Because
you write good characters. They're fun.
Well,
Gracie was fun.
Hear this. Hope that other people hear this. Because, no, the truth is I love a lot of characters in a movie. And I do, you know, I mean, people have said to me, why do you write with so many characters? This is just the way I am, you know. And, I mean, even on some of my shows, I've had 6 and 7 guests at a time. They go, what are you doing? I said, this is just how I am. You know, I can do this. But I like a lot of characters in this. But you have kept true to the female characters, certainly. And that's a hard thing to do. And you've done
actually,
it.
Actually, women
you
are one of my strong points. I write them as well as about anybody, I think.
You write wonderfully it because it's not easy to get to the emotion. And some of the scripts that I know that you have from the past are wonderful.
Yeah.
And I still think there'll be a place for them someday because you have really, really good scripts. And I think people, you know, if they got to the right production company, they would take them because, you know, I see scripts all the time. I don't take too many clients anymore because it's just – I just don't. I mean, I can't really help them like I did because I'm trying to actually do the shows, write, and do a lot of things. But I think that, you know, in Hollywood, we'll all hope that we all get out there, you know, someday. But everybody think that, you know, everybody wants to get out there, you know. But you are somebody that kept me writing only because I was so scared. I remember when I sent you something the first time. It was worse than sending it to a studio. I mean, because I knew how good you wrote, and I thought, oh no, I don't think I could do this, and I did it. It was harder for me to send to you than it was sent to any studio. But then actually, you did like the script, and it was like great.
Yeah, well,
you know,
that and Doctor in the House or whatever, Grand Central, they were fun, and I like romantic comedies. I don't do many. That's kind of your strong
I know
suit.
It is. I love it.
I like dramedies more by that. It's more dramatic than a comedy with,
but you've
you know,
some
with
really
touch. And I do a lot of family stuff.
Yes, you've done some good characters. I mean, and you work with kids, and you work with kids, and you work with animals, and a lot of directors do not like to do that.
No.
And that's where you are strong in the family sector. I mean, you've done a lot of films. You want to just say a couple of the names that you've done, I mean, that are out? Because I've seen, they may come on for the holiday season because they're all so, you know, such a good
family
film.
Holiday is with the kid, played Joey on Full House.
Yes.
Dave Coulier.
Okay. Yeah.
We shot that in Spokane for a Lifetime about 5 years ago. And it's done quite well, actually. It's a little Christmas program. This one today was originally called A Root Beer Christmas when we shot it. And
you have some very good actors. We should say who's in this one.
Oh, yeah. It's Tess Harper, Edward Herman, and Christy Swanson.
But
and
also
my son, actually.
Your son. And your son is a really, really good actor. I mean, I still want him for several of my roles because he really is. He's a very good actor, and he fits in almost all of these parts because he just has a lot of feeling when he talks. I mean, he's just not acting. He's got a very good emotional trait in him, good smile. He really is good. So I think he's got a good career ahead of him.
He grew up on set. He's the only one. I have five children. He's the only one that really went into the business, although he and I and his younger brother are currently working on a project that he's producing. I'm writing the screenplay. His younger brother did the story, and Casey will produce it, and he's probably going to play the lead role. And, you know, it's interesting. He's been down there 11 years, and you have to network. People don't realize that. When I first started, I left here, and I moved down there, and it was tough. I mean, it was really hard. And in those days, before the internet, I hate to date myself that much, but you had to carry around a bunch of scripts that you'd written to show people. They're called show scripts. And I only had 10, and I ran out of them almost immediately. I was sleeping in my car, actually. I'd left the family here. I live in Utah, but I left the family here, and I'd moved down there and tried to write with a friend. And we'd done a few things, but he went back to the financial sector where he'd been working as a banker. And I was just kind of on my own. And so I became what's called a house sitter in Hollywood. I don't know. Do you know what that is?
I do, but maybe you should say what that is.
Oh, okay. Well, what happens in Hollywood, we have a lot of money and stuff. People go to Cannes or France, you know, all over the world, and they'll go 2 or 3 weeks. So they want somebody reliable to sit in the house, water the lawn, feed the dog, et cetera. And you usually stay in the servant quarters. These are people with a lot of money. And so that's what I was doing in Rancho Park.
Well,
and
never know
writing during the day. Well, Fred Weintraub was at what was then Lorimar Studios, the old MGM Studios in Culver City, and I was going over there every day, and he had optioned a screenplay I'd written, my very first one, actually, because he liked the writing, but he said, you need to learn a lot. And he was a tough taskmaster. He's the guy who brought Bruce Lee to America and used to be head of production at MGM. He's since retired, but he was a great teacher.
Which script was that? Did it ever get?
It was called originally. It was called Aftermath, and I changed it to Sanctuary. It's about the kids.
I love that script.
My log line for that was one of the best I ever came up with. High Noon meets Lord of the Flies.
It's great. It's a good script.
Yeah.
The characters are super. I mean, really.
Yeah, I've always thought it could be done. It's time is coming around again. I mean, with the Hunger Games and The Road and some of those
world. Some of your movies will always, they are for any time. They really are. That one is one. I'd like
you
to
know,
try
it's
that
interesting though. He helped me develop that. I was with him almost a year and paid me very little money. I was also working as an armed security guard. I walked around an undercar garage and protected BMWs and
Lexus. That's why they put you in the acting. You're always a cop. Not mostly. You're a cop.
Always a cop. Well, I'm big. I'm 6'4", and I look like a cop. Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, so after that didn't pan out, and Fred kind of moved on, and I moved on, I decided I would never be able to make a movie of my own. I wanted to direct, I decided. I wanted to just do a little film and see if I could learn it. And you have to remember, the only screenwriting thing at all back in the 80s really was USC. And you had to be a student and go to the screenwriting. Well, I couldn't do that, so I had to teach myself. So I started doing that.
A lot of good writers teach themselves, a lot of them.
Well, you know what? Everything, if you want to do something, you really are self-taught.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I do.
You can go to school and you get the things, but you know, when it comes down to it, you're the one that has to make yourself get up and write every day.
That's right.
And you have to make a habit out of it. Before we started this, I don't generally try to write on the weekends, but I'm working on a revise for a client, and I want to get it done because I have three other projects waiting. So I write on Saturdays. That's what I was doing right up until I called you. And,
I try to write
5 hours a day. Huh?
You do it when you can. You have to. I mean, it's just...
Yeah. I try to write 5 hours a day, and sometimes it's hard, sometimes it's not so hard. I mean, right now this one isn't too hard because I've been over it once before. This is my second rewrite for him, so it's not too bad.
Right,
I'll let you read it later. Hang on.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, we're here for tablets.
It's money. There you go.
We aren't allowed to take.
Well, he said on his thing he could. It's made out to him. Not to you. Don't open it. It's sealed. Okay? Don't worry about it. Okay, because I don't have any others, so I gave you money instead. Sorry, I'm entering the door at my house. Thank you, guys.
Okay. This is all right. This is live. This is fine. We all
this
do.
Is live.
This is
live. Yes,
I
know.
This is how I learned. This is how I learned how to do this from April Robin. I just said one time her doorbell was ringing and the dog was barking, and I went like, this is great because I think I want to be just like her because she just let it all
well,
fly.
I work out of my house. Obviously.
A lot of people do that.
Yeah, yeah. I love that. And I have an office, and all I do in my office is work. I don't come here to goof around.
See, because I like to go.
That's
like
the other thing. You have to have a workspace.
Yeah. Yes, you do. You absolutely. Well, actually, you know, you do have to have one. I have an office. I have an office in my house. I have a regular office. And you know what? When I really, really, really want to concentrate, I go to Starbucks and I don't bring my computer, my phone, nothing. Because otherwise... I just get, you know, I'll start doing something or the phone will ring. I just, that's where I really go. And then I rewrite it at home. But I just have to really think sometimes, you know, alone. And even though Starbucks is busy, doesn't matter.
I live about, 20 miles from Sundance. And my brother-in-law has a cabin up in the mountains. And when I'm really under a deadline, there's no TV, there's no phone, there's no nothing. They have electricity.
Okay,
but it's way up in the mountain. Yeah, about 9,000 foot level. And I'll drive up there and take enough food and I'll stay however long I have to get it to knock a draft out or whatever. Because like you said, you know, with the phone and...
Everything. You're tempted. I mean, it's just the way it is.
Our lives aren't our own.
No, but actually before all the computer and everything else, it was a lot easier because I would actually go to the library and sit there and just write.
Yeah.
And, you know, and
did you write on yellow pads? How did you do it?
Yeah, I do. I do. I write on yellow pads.
Longhand?
I still do.
Do
and
you really?
Yeah. And, you know, when I go to the computer then, it's just everything changes. But at least I have an idea of what I'm doing. But my conversation and dialogue does change when I'm really doing it. Otherwise, but I have to get it down because I do like dialogue. And so, as we know, I talk a lot. But the dialogue for me, I just have to, when I start a conversation between new people, I keep going, you know. And then I cut naturally. People would sometimes like to cut me out, but that's, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, that's how I write. I do a lot. That's one of the reasons I went into script writing. I mean, we were talking on one of my shows, and people say, like, you have to make a decision and say, what are you sometimes? And I'm thinking to myself, I don't even know sometimes. And I really consider myself a screenwriter, even though I've written books and I like to write books, I still consider myself a screenwriter because I love screenwriting. I mean, I just love
it.
You know, it's just such
it's
fun.
It's not for everybody. It's
no.
A very obscure literature, you know.
Yep.
I mean, it has to be so good people spend millions on it, and yet very few people ever read them.
And that's, you know what I say? When I see people tell me, you know, we're talking about things, I say, I learned one thing from Craig Clay. You said to me one of the hardest things in Hollywood is for someone to say yes, and that is true.
Yeah.
It's very true.
Oh, yeah. It's
and
a doctor no
option,
kind of town.
Yeah, we get an option. I hope, you know, that this option will go through for us because this could be good.
Well,
and
I think it will.
Yeah, I think
I'm
so
pretty
too.
Sure it will, actually.
It's
a good
really
story. It's a good story.
It is. And, you know, it's really funny because it's about, you know, someone that does romance writing and under another name. And since I've been doing the show, romance writers are on my show a lot, and they're I love having them on because they are so free-spirited. And when I wrote that, it was years ago, I never really realized what it was like. So Leo probably would be different now if I wrote him.
Oh, yeah, probably.
Yeah. Because I've met so many people.
It's interesting. Well, the trick here was we had a female who was kind of did a Dear John column, writing as a man, and the guy that falls for her is a guy writing as a woman as a romance author. So that's the hook.
But that's not how reality is, though, because I do a lot of people that are writing erotic romances and very heavy, intense romances. And I had a show Thursday night, and a few of the people didn't use their regular names, so it's kind of weird, but you call them in their regular, you know, in their different names. But I've always had different names. For myself, I was Max Irving. You know, I changed it, but now that's very, you know, common now because people really, and I'm sure it was in the past, you just don't know who wrote what. It doesn't matter, actually, you know.
You mean a pseudonym, obviously, or known to prove.
Yeah, certainly, when they're, and everybody, you know, on the show, except for one of the people, I wrote down the names that they use, and that's what I call them because they have small children and some of them, and they don't want to be called, you know, they don't want people to know that they write a romance, so that's fine. But that was really funny because now I meet all these people after I wrote people like that.
Tell me about now erotic romance. Is that a new thing? There's always been
erotic
dirty books,
romance.
Right?
Okay, erotic romance is just. I'll tell you exactly. Okay. Ree McGahey, she introduced me to all of these people that are romance writers, and she actually has the Dancing with Bear publishing now. And she went to completely the opposite side of very clean, wholesome stories, and she wrote like 20 or so, you know, romance. Now, she said when you're writing romance, and like if you see it on the, let's say you're looking at two people having a love scene. If the people, when it's real erotic, you get to go inside the bedroom. Instead of them closing the door, you go inside the bedroom on erotic, and then you know everything that they're doing, step by step of what they're doing.
It's still done, though, tastefully, right? I mean,
the thing is, right, it's not. And see, that's what people think, it's like porn. It's not. It's a story, and there's sex, and there's a lot of sex. But, you know, in Field of Passion, which was Love Changes in my book, what happened was I wrote a Love Changes. You read that one. That's a story, and it's a good story.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I went with World Castle, I tried to increase a couple of the scenes to sexier scenes. So there's 1 to 5. Okay, that's I can only get to 1. So it's only on 1, so it's not that, you know. It's hot, but not that hot, you know. But they went very hot. And but they have stories, and that's what the interesting thing is because I've been having a lot of them on my show, and they're very good writers. And I think what people think when they hear erotic, and this is because of the e-books now, because e-books are very – now like years ago, people would get something was a little, you know, more sexy. They wouldn't want people – they wouldn't want to carry around the book. You put it on the Kindle or whatever.
Kindle or your iPad.
Because I think if you remember when we did Gracie, I mean, she had a book. She was so intense of a person that she didn't want anybody to think she even believed in love. One dropped out of her purse. It's really funny.
One of his books.
Yeah, you know, and it's so weird, you know, because, but erotic is, you know, and erotica is different. But erotic, there's a lot of hot, steamy sex romances, and that market is huge. It's the biggest market.
Really?
It's a huge market. Oh, yeah, huge market.
See, where have I been hiding? Well, I knew there was a lot on the internet.
Doing screenplays, it's so different. It's very different. And a lot of them are very good writers. So
First We Dance, and
that's got some
steamy scenes in it.
And
but the way I wrote those, you don't see anything, really.
No, that's right, because you close the door.
The camera just kind of floats away, but you get them started, and then you leave it. And I think people's imaginations are much more... Or much sexier, actually, than writing it all down.
In that particular one, First We Dance, and that one, right, because, you know, the whole story is kind of you don't know who did it. You know, it's like a whodunit.
Right, yeah, well, it's a thriller, yeah.
It's a good one. You know, that was a good one. You know, and that's why, you know, and a lot of screenplays that you've done are fabulous. I mean, and that's why, you know, you can never, I'm always telling people keep writing, because I still think some of yours, even the sci-fi picture that you did, I mean, and certainly Sanctuary and Sparrow, these are definite movies still.
And they're all very different, aren't they?
You do. Yes, you do. You write very different. And, you know, and that's why a lot of people, they don't realize, like, I write comedies, I write children's books, and I do write thrillers. I've written a horror film. I mean, it's good to change because you don't get bored.
Absolutely.
You certainly don't, because you've done some really different things, because but you've done them for hire, too.
You know, and
so you do what they want them to do. I did one for hire. It was very hard for me. You do it all the
time.
Yeah, it was very hard because... I had so many, you know, I couldn't do this, I couldn't do that, but I finally did it, and I got to the end, I got there. I didn't think I could, and she knows that, and I got the people that wanted me to do it. It was very hard for me to get there, because I liked, to, I wanted, I, when I write, I always don't know my ending. So I knew the ending here. So for me, that was a little harder, because I had to make sure nobody else did.
I try to surprise myself, too, on an ending. Except this lead one I did. Yeah, the one I did for Leave, I rewrote the whole thing. I threw out most of what they had. And I started at the back that time. I'd do it while I was running in the gym, and I picked the least likely killer, and then I moved everything forward. So that means you have setups and payoffs, which so many young authors don't, or writers don't know. But you set something up in the first act that you're going to pay off in the third act, because you can't lie to your audience. You cannot lie to your reader or the audience. You have to give them clues, but not so many that they figure it out.
Right.
And, you know, on First We Dance, everybody that's read that for me, nobody figured out who the killer was.
I know.
It's a pretty good one that way.
It was really good. But we used different techniques, too, of how to get there, you know, on, you know, things that happen. And, you know, but I think that that's the thing. You know, a lot of times when you're seeing a movie, which I drive my husband crazy, when in the movie, I'm already telling him who did it, you know.
Yeah, you already figure it out.
See, for me, even if they don't like a story that I've done, I'd least like them to be surprised of who did it, because that's why I don't like to know who did it.
Yeah,
because
then
it's more fun. It's so much more fun.
If you surprise yourself, you're going to surprise your audience.
That's right, because you won't set it up that way, because they won't know.
Yeah.
You know, I want to ask you a question, because this is going to come up, because I know the people that want. Okay, everybody thinks that their book can be a movie. Talk to everybody a little bit about that, because that's really important, because they don't realize that everything can't be.
I've adapted books. That's the most difficult thing for me. I'll speak to one I did for the BBC, which was called Bravest of the Brave. It's about a 400-page book, and the first 200 pages literally, it's a great story, but the 200 pages are procedural and about what it was. This is a World War II book about a man who was born in France but was an English citizen, so he spoke perfect, flawless French. And so the SOE, Special Operation Executive, which is a forerunner of MI5 and all those, sent him to France to set up the underground network. And it's his story. But I went through it, and the way I do a book, and books are tough, because you really have to throw out a lot of it. That's why everybody says, well, I like the book better. Well, that means somebody didn't do their job when they adapted it. The trick to a book is it's like doing the Michelangelo statue. You look at the block of granite, and you just look at what's going to go away, so Michelangelo is in the middle there, you know. And it's the same way. So I go through and I highlight. I'll go through a book, and if it's a scene or an idea or something that I highlight, it's something I know I want to keep in the screenplay. And after I get 100 of those, when I get it down to 100 of those, because that's about how many scenes are in a feature-length film, it's 100 scenes. Then I can start writing the screenplay. But I'll give you an example. I was asked to rewrite a stage play. Actually, it's from Chicago, a guy from Chicago.
Oh, I know.
And
that.
It's a cute stage play, but it was dated. It had been done in the 80s, and it's a play is not a screenplay.
Right.
And so I added things, I adapted it, and then I thought I did a good job. It was really funny, and I didn't take away from the guts of the thing. I added to it, I made it more visual, etc. Well, the playwright was so incensed that the producers had done that, he threatened to sue him. So they ended up shooting the stage play as a screenplay, and it bombed because it just doesn't work. You can't have, for example, it's a Jewish thing. It's a funny
play. I know exactly
play.
What it is. I know exactly
what
it is.
Yeah, I won't mention it because
no, we won't. But I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
The playwright decided he wanted to direct. He'd never directed film before, and he got a DP who had never shot one before. Well, that's a recipe for disaster. He had a pretty good cast, but when you have a Seder scene, literally, that lasts 5 minutes, boy, unless you're really into Jewish culture and stuff,
right,
why do it? I've thrown it all out. I just started it and then left it.
Well, I know what particularly scene that is, and, you know, that's true, because, you know, because there are certain things that you don't need to show, and nobody will understand, because that's one of the things. When you write an ethnic, you have to be careful about that, because you have to realize that everybody they have to relate in some way, you know, because other groups are going to be seeing this, other ethnic groups, or you know, whoever's going to watch
it. People who don't know anything about Judaism,
yes,
for example.
Yes, you have to, right, exactly.
So I've always told them, if somebody walks in and doesn't know one single Jewish holiday,
right,
it still has to make sense to them.
Yes, exactly. Which
so
is one of the things.
The underlying
story
was a romantic comedy, and it's a very good one.
Yes.
It's one of the best things I ever wrote, and it never made it anywhere. I got paid for
because I think that sometimes I am not that type, but sometimes when somebody writes a scene or writes something in a book, they will not change it, and that is completely wrong, because you have to change. I mean, if you do not change things, you know, and I know there's one particular script that I did where I did not like that last line, okay? I went crazy. I kept doing it over and over, and I kept repeating it and doing it because I didn't like what they said, and I didn't like the way they said it. And I had to figure out how to say it, because when you're doing a script, it's line by line. So if you have one line that doesn't make any sense and it's not good, it could ruin that whole scene. So you have to leave each scene with something that means something. So for me, and
you know,
which I understand like you do, you have to, and if the person that writes it originally will not agree to that, that is a tough thing. You know, because
when you've
done mine, we have just agreed to the fact of it reads okay, and that's fine, because once you make the decision to have somebody touch your work, you have to be sure that you trust them.
Yeah, and, you know, authors, especially novelists, tend to get hung up on things that are really impossible to show.
Right.
The one thing about screenplays, you need to be able to show things.
Right.
And in a novel, you can spend you can spend 20 pages delving into the guy's inner character and stuff. And, you know, we both know amateur screenwriters who have their first screenplay, all their screen direction tells us stuff that you can't show.
Right.
You know, they tell us
it's
things
hard,
about
and
character.
Also, it could cost too much money. That's the thing.
Oh.
And you have to make sure that
well,
the scene is not too expensive, because otherwise they're not going to shoot it.
Well, I'll tell you, what I tell all the kids that come to me, and they're not kids, they're some older people, right, but they come to me and ask, well, what should I do? And I tell them to read screenplays, read good ones and bad ones.
Yep.
And I always remember the old thing that Luc Besson, the wonderful French director and a great writer too, said. He said, if you steal from one person, it's plagiarism. Steal from many, and it's research.
Right.
And what I tell them is to find a writer you like and copy his style.
Yep.
And what happens is your style eventually comes out of that.
Right.
Because you don't keep that style, because that's not you.
Right, exactly.
But it gives you a good head, gives you a start.
Or you
and
go nowhere
was,
because you can't write a script. It's not,
right, well,
you know,
if you've never done it, I had never done it before. I didn't even know the formatting.
Yeah.
And there were no, you know, my big deal then was an IBM Selectric. Remember those? Because
all I remember is when you sent it, though, that was already with Final Draft. You
yeah,
had Magic,
Final
Movie
Draft
Magic,
was out by then. But when
yeah,
I first
and then
started,
when I got yours,
in
right,
the 70s,
and,
it was it was an IBM Selectric. So if I changed the thing, I had to rewrite the whole page.
Yeah, yeah. See, that was. I remember when I first saw your scripts. I went like, "Oh my God, his scripts are perfect. Why aren't mine?" And then all these programs came out, and they're wonderful. But you also have to be able to write something in it. because they tell you, just they
program
it,
format
it.
You have to come up with the right words.
Right, and you know, I think that a lot of people, they don't realize dialogue. You know, and the one thing that's different in writing a book is you're right at that scene. Okay, and when you're writing a book, you have to get there sometimes. But actually, for me, because I did all these scripts, it's much easier to write a novel because you realize that, you know, you can get to a place, your reader is smart, okay, and the viewer is smart.
Yep.
So you actually realize that they'll figure it out. You got there to another part.
People always ask me, well, how do you impress studios? The biggest thing I have to do the reason I doctor more scripts is because the dialogue is bad.
Yeah.
And I'll just give you two real good examples, and I've done it a million times now. But new writers or writers who haven't hit yet or haven't figured it out tend to, first of all, say they tend to make incredibly long dialogue sequences where they say everything that they want you to know.
Right.
People rarely tell you what they're really thinking.
No, that's
in real life.
Right. That's
the best dialogue, you don't tell them what you're thinking, you talk around it. And the other thing is fragments. People talk in fragments. And I see so many that there are not even any contractions.
Right.
And I said, who talks like this?
Right.
Nobody.
See, that's the thing. You have to, the dialogue, that's why I tell people, you know, I said, you have to read it out loud, because that is when you realize, oh, this is not, nobody talks like that.
No,
it
they don't. And,
right, no.
And I especially find with women authors, for some reason, when they have their women talk, they just go on and on and on.
Right.
And if you got a tough babe, you know, they don't say much. I mean,
nope.
Best, I always think of Steve McQueen, and he said this once, and I think he got it from Charlie Chaplin, but he said the best script is one where the least amount of talking happens, because it's a movie, not a talkie.
Right.
And you,
well, look
you
at Clint Eastwood when he does, well, Clint Eastwood, he doesn't say a lot in his movies, but he's, when he says something, you listen.
The one I'm doing for my son right now, I'm in the first, I've just finished the first act, he has three lines, and he's the lead.
Really? Wow.
Really? Yeah. But, you know, it's an action thing, and there's a lot of drama in it, and it's a guy who's just gotten out of prison for, you know, involuntary manslaughter, and comes back to his girlfriend, and they have a baby, and da-da-da-da, and it's all this stuff. And what you do is you see him being a man of action rather than hear him talking about what he's going to do.
Which isn't a bad thing in a movie, you know, but, you know, the problem is, though, sometimes, you know, as you know, when you send it out to a production company, it matters who reads this. And that is...
Oh, yeah.
That's
almost always
problem.
Women, too,
if
though.
They do not understand how a script should read, then they're not, that's it. You're done. I mean, and that's why... go ahead.
I was going to say, you ought to explain how Hollywood works. Nobody reads in Hollywood. It's the only place in the world where they hire people they call readers. Mm. And they're usually women.
Yeah.
They call them D-girls when I was there.
Really?
Development girls.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And they're usually women who are writers.
Yeah.
And you have to get past them. And your first three pages better be just dynamite.
See, that's the problem. And most people, you know, and as you know, now for sure, like it used to be where it was, you know, 120 was the limit. But now if you do 110, 90, because it costs so much to make movies now, a lot of these movies are maybe 96. Yeah, because each page is a minute, right? I mean, we're telling people this. Yeah, each page is a minute. So if you have 96 minutes, you know, and some movies, like I know myself, I time every, like I'm, when I go to a movie, I like to say, okay, what's happening at this time? What's happening at that time? And when you walk out, I like to feel good or feel something. I mean, there are movies that are very dramatic and you just sit there and you're like waiting, you know, and nobody gets up. And that's also a good thing, which means because it got to their heart. And they're scared,
well,
you know.
It's like in a stage or you're watching a play, people will wait, you know, they'll wait forever for laughter. Don't ever cut off a laugh. It's the old saw. It's the same thing. If the dialogue's good and it's a really kind of, you take something like Dial M for Murder. If you look at that, that's really a very much a closet drama.
Yeah.
It's all about that little apartment and their life together and how he kills her. And if you watch that movie, you think, gee, how did I ever get involved with that the first time? And yet, there's this unrelenting tension. You realize something's going on.
Well, see,
and,
those are the better movies. Those are the movies
from
years ago. I mean, if people really want to learn to write a movie, write it, watch old movies.
That's right.
You know, and
now,
some
it
of
has
the
changed
plots,
somewhat.
Yeah. You have to change.
But,
well, you have to put in all the new things. You know, you have to put in the new electronic equipment and all of that stuff. But, you know, you got to put a cell phone. You got to do this. You got to do that. But the way they do the films is, you know, and the good thing is a lot of people from the past, they work together. And you as a director know that. When they work well together from the director point, you want to have them in a film again because the job is easier for you because they get along well and they do good dialogue. Like Catherine Hepburn and, you know, Spencer Tracy.
Oh, and Tracy
together.
And those guys, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
The thing is, I've worked with a lot of very good actors, and it's just amazing to hand your thing over to an actor and see it come to life.
Yep. Yeah.
I mean, when it works, it's just wonderful.
It's wonderful. And it does. It can work, you know. And I do think it matters who the director is. You are a director, too. And so that does matter. You have a lot of feeling, and you know what you're doing, and you write. You see, it does help to be more well-rounded, because this way you put the film together in the right way. I mean, and people get the feeling. When you're watching a movie, you know if there's feeling in it or not. If you don't feel anything, that's not a good thing, you know. Especially when you're watching a film, if it doesn't mean anything and you click that and you turn it off, well, that's it. But the other problem is sometimes people now are too fast to click it off on the, you know, if you're watching it at home, you know, a movie, because it takes time sometimes.
It does. You have to give them a little time to get into the characterization.
Right,
for example,
right.
Tomorrow night, if you watch, you know, A Christmas Wish.
Oh, I'll be watching. I would be watching. I'll
watch
them all.
And it's very much a woman's movie in that it's from the woman's point of view.
Yes.
And so when I started, it's my story. It's an original story. I worked with my partner on it he and I did a story on it. But when I wrote the screenplay, I knew, first of all, that it's a very limited budget. I didn't have a lot of time. We were trying to beat, and this is the only Christmas movie I've ever shot that was actually just before Christmas. We finished on the 21st of December. And so we had snow and everything and all the lights, et cetera. But what it came down to and what I really noticed when I was editing, and that helps my writing a great deal, is what you start throwing out. Scenes I thought were going to be wonderful, and I, you know, spent a lot of time in the kitchen. There's a character, played by Paige Petrucca is her name, and she's kind of the gal that's been in the diner when the Christie gets the job for 10 days, and she kind of shows her the rope. Very funny character. I always pick somebody
in. Those are the good characters to write. Those are the good ones to write.
Well, they're fun.
Yeah.
I always choose a character that is what I call my voice of truth. They never lie to you.
Right.
So you know what's going on if you listen to that character. I don't tell you who it is, but as you start to listen to him, you realize that's the person telling you the right things.
Right.
And that's, as I went through it, there was a whole scene as they're cleaning up the kitchen and stuff that I cut literally almost off altogether because I realized I got to the point she'd said what she needed to, and the rest of it was just cutesy stuff.
Yeah.
And you know what? Audiences don't have time for cutesy stuff.
Not anymore. Right.
It was fun to watch it, but it wasn't a comedy. This is a drama with some comedic elements.
Right.
And so when you watch it, you'll say, well, you need to get inside, you know, Christie's head as
the
protagonist.
Well, I think it's important, though. I mean, you have to do that because, you know, I think you have to feel something for the character to enjoy the movie. I mean, I think, you know, that will make people, because your movies are always heartfelt, and I think it, certainly at this time of year is the best time to watch those movies.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I did something I don't know if I'd ever do again. I put a three-year-old in the movie. And, you know, three-year-olds are like dogs. You can get them to do certain things, but once they're hungry or tired, have done it once or twice, they don't do it anymore. It's my granddaughter, and she's five now. But I realized just having a baby helped the whole sequence along.
Yeah.
And it's funny the way it worked out. I had to cut around her a lot, but then I cut her in at various places that worked so well. Everybody said, how'd you get a three-year-old to do that? You know what? She just did things that I was fortunate were on camera because it wasn't scripted.
Right.
You know, she's three. And you can see her in the trailer. She's 3 years old. I don't know that I would do that again. It's the same thing. I don't think I would ever work with a Wolverine again. You just can't train them. You can't get them to do what you need them to do. Dogs, different story. Horses.
I wrote that Hello, Dolly, which I do love that script, and I want to redo it. I actually like you to revise it for me. But when I first read it, and see, I knew who it was for because the person, the actor, did pass away, and then changed everything. But I knew what happened is when I changed the male character female grandmother to a male. That was hard, you know. And then I had kids in there, and they told me to take out the kids. And see, I should have never done that, okay, because it meant something because, you know, and I added just one kid, but then she had, you know, because I wrote even when you did it with the Grand Central, she has three children. But in the Hello, Dolly, I took them out, and that was a mistake. So, you know, and I'll probably go back to the original when I rewrite it because, you know, sometimes you write a story, you have to show what's going on in their lives. Because that got
them
to the place where they are. And that's one of the things, it is hard to shoot with kids. And that's why, you know, you always have to look at how the producers are looking at things. It's about money. money and time.
Yep.
And
oh,
people
yeah.
don't realize
that. You have to
that.
Be aware of that when you're writing them.
Yes.
And see, I write what I do, so I know pretty much when I get there where all my shots are because they're in my head.
Well,
but for example, on this
too.
One, yeah, cause, and that's the deal. It's, you write it,
yeah.
you direct it, you edit it. Pretty soon you get a feel for what's going to work long before you ever get there. And some stuff you'll never think would work. There are happy accidents, certainly. I mean, when I was directing Zac Efron, his first film, long before he was big time, I didn't realize what a good writer he really was because I wasn't going to put him on the horse. I was going to do a stunt person. But by putting him on the horse, then I could do more things because lead actors do their own stunts or ride
right.
or whatever.
Right.
But he was such a great kid. I just talked to him the other day. He said it was. He made a very interesting comment. You know, he's huge now, and he said it was more fun when I was still trying to make it. He said everything. Yeah. You know, I was. He says no to a zillion projects now because they're so concerned of what'll help or hurt his career. He said before I could take anything I wanted. And I thought,
okay, but the problem
that,
is nobody really knows that, you know. And as you see now with the actors that are coming up, and from they've done stuff in the past, you know, like with Jeff Bridges, you know, there are roles being written now for actors that and they are winning awards now. And I think so a little bit now that has changed because I think they're trying to put in a little more seasoned actors because, you know, sometimes these parts really need some of these actors. I mean, you know, they're good actors, you know, and. You know, there's, you know as well as I do, there's nothing worse than taking a really good film and putting somebody in it just because they want them in it, you know.
Yeah, and you can have 10 good actors and one bad one. The only one they'll see is the bad one.
So, yeah, I mean, so what would you tell people? I mean, because I tell people all the time. I mean, so right, let's say they want to write a script. What's the advice you would give them about how they would start it and how they would actually keep going when they say they might not be able to finish it?
Okay, the first thing I tell people is write about something you really are interested in. Tell the story you have to tell, not what you think will sell, not what you think a certain actor will go for. Because I never write it with a certain actor in mind. I used to try to do that, and it never worked.
I know.
And one thing I have to say is, for me personally, if I can't hear their voices by my three pages in, literally the characters' voices in my head, I can't write the script.
Right.
Because they tell me what to write. Once I know them, you know. But the thing is, so write that story you've always wanted to see and see it in your head.
Yeah.
I tell students this all the time. They spend all their time in books and trying to come up with great dialogue or something, but they never see the movie play out in their head.
Right.
But see, that's what a screenplay is. It's a blueprint.
Right.
It's also actor bait, but it's a blueprint. You see and you read a movie is what you do. And you know, I have friends that don't have any idea what a screenplay is. I've let them read stuff. They say, oh, it's made it so much clearer. I understand now.
Yeah, because it is true. It's a very different, it's not the same as writing a book, but you should be able to understand the story just the same. I mean,
I agree.
Because if you don't, forget it. It's not going to work. You know.
And you know, some of the best screenplays in the world. I go back to Butch and the Kid. Read Goldman's screenplay. It's on the net. You can get it almost anywhere and download it.
Read
the way he wrote it.
Yeah.
He's a wonderful novelist, but he'd never done the screenplay genre before, so his format's a bit different. But as you watch it, you can see the movie in your head. I mean, George Roy Hill knew exactly what he was shooting when he got it.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful read. It's a wonderful read.
Which is really...
The other thing I would say is...
What you just said is
don't
that wonderful
read. Don't
be
too hard on yourself.
The wonderful read. See, it's got to be a good read. And I like...
Oh.
You know, you and I used to send scripts out, yours and mine. And the one thing that we did get, if they didn't take it, they would say it was a good read. And so people out there that are listening, that a good read is a very good thing to have. You got to have somebody say that. If they don't say good read... You might as well tear it up because you have to have a good read. If they can't read it, it's not going to work out for you. You're never going to have anybody finish reading it.
Or if they get bored.
Yeah.
You can't get bored and you can't lose them.
Right.
And you can't spend. I got a screenplay from a friend of mine who thought he'd written the best thing in the world. Bless his heart.
Well,
he's an attorney and he's very, you know, very well spoken, etc. But my word, the first page is nothing but screen direction. One huge block of it.
Yeah.
And just getting through it was incredibly difficult. And plus, he tells me all these things about characters' lives that you can't show. That's not what screen directing is for.
Right.
The other thing I would tell people starting out is don't quit. Everybody
right.
gets
See, that's
discouraged.
That's what I say, too, exactly.
All of
See.
Us do.
You
and,
know, when
you know,
I,
one isn't enough. Write it,
no.
put it away, start another one.
Right, exactly. Now, when I wrote Love Changes as a script first. Then I wrote the book.
Right.
Now, when I read the book now, I am redoing the script Love Changes, and because the truth is, the book was better, okay? So I have to, and
yeah.
I see it myself. So I have to change all my scenes at the beginning now because I realize where I started it doesn't have to be. I have to get rid of that and throw it away and start where I think it should be now, you know, and where the book goes. I'm going to go back and do it somewhat toward the book because the book had a lot of different characters that I never put in the screenplay. So, I mean, that you have to just do a lot of them, and then maybe like 5 years later, then you go back and you go, you know what? This was bad. This wasn't right, okay? It wasn't the way it should be. But I think people have to really look at themselves and be honest and say, this isn't really how it should be. Don't say it's fabulous because that doesn't make it in Hollywood. Nothing is that fabulous, as you know. You know what I mean? It has to be
yeah.
a good read, but you got to get somebody to read it.
Well, the other thing, too, is if you have a really good story, very often what will happen is they'll say, gee, we'd like to buy this from you, and they pay you off, and then they give it to somebody like me to write it.
Exactly.
Because it's a good idea.
Right.
And see, a good idea, like you say, a good story is a good story.
Right.
But if you cannot write it in such a way that it looks professional, and the other thing, typos, people learn what certain, the one I get the most is Y-O-U-R, for
yeah,
you are.
I know.
That's the possessive.
Because spell check.
Your
spell
towel,
check doesn't
not
check
you
it.
Are.
Yeah.
I get all the time, and it's so simple now with computers to go back, and yeah, that's spelled correctly, but that's wrong, that's bad usage. My word, learn the English language, people. Then
well,
break the rules.
Okay, now this I know. That is your mother talking because your mother.
Yeah, my
English
mom was an English teacher.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, so because you could see, like, okay, in your personality, some of the things come out. Sometimes, like, when I'd be reading your scripts, I go, did you do that? Because I could feel it sometimes because
yeah.
how you wrote it, which is real, you know. I mean, that's good. They have to have some emotion, you know. And a lot of mine, you know, you would always ask me, you would say to me, why are they on Michigan Avenue? Why are they having a limo? Why are they having hot dogs? Why are they outside?
Yeah, I remember that because I said,
this is Chicago. A lot of you are, if you look, go in downtown, if you go into Michigan Avenue, there's a lot of limo. I mean, that's how it is, you know. And so I don't live on Michigan Avenue, but when I'm thinking of that, that's what I'm thinking of. So you're right. You have to, if you live in a certain place and you're writing about it, you have to be true to where it is.
Absolutely.
Which
and the
you
other
had
thing,
a lot
too,
of
is you have to like what you're doing. There's nothing worse than trying to finish a screenplay you don't care for.
Right. Well, you've had a lot of
It's usually an exercise in futility.
Yeah, you've had a lot
and
of those,
one other,
but you finished them. But you finished them.
Yeah, one other thing, too, is, and I think you would agree with this, good, well, bad, every writer, but good writers particularly have a voice.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
When you read their stuff, you hear a voice, maybe not their voice, but you hear their writing
yes.
voice. It's whoever's telling the story, there's a voice to it. And the
right.
best screenplays have a voice.
Yes. And you know, you really should know your characters. I mean, you know, when I started, usually what I try to do is know something about the past because that may never be in it. But I have
yep.
to know where they were
yep.
before so I can put them where they are now.
Do your research.
We all have a past.
People, my word. I've never been to Spain, but Sparrow on the Roof, I researched very carefully.
Yeah. Well, that you know what? And that one eventually. The only problem that one had, it was so beautiful, the first 7 pages. And
yeah,
because you are a director, it was because you were going to direct it and it would be beautiful and you were showing all of this gorgeous, I mean, it was just really beautiful. And that a lot of readers didn't get that. And that
yeah,
was,
it is. Although it's been optioned
changed,
again.
I know. Because this is a movie that eventually will be.
Well,
I know.
Well, the problem with
and
it is that always been
and
just,
those are the two.
The backdrop
and
is
cool.
But the story is about a little girl and an old man. And
I just think,
that's
you know,
the real story.
Okay, I want you to give your website so they can look at your website.
Oh.
So.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I've had this. It's my AOL moniker, but it's Screen RTR. So Screen spelled normally RTR, screenwriter, like a vanity license plate.
Mm-hmm.
It's just www.screenwriter.com.
And then they can find you. You know, I mean, you.
Or
have,
you put my name in Google, it'll take you to both places.
I know. See, that's what I've spent 2 years doing, in which it works now. But, you know, I mean, the thing is, people have to really get out there. They have to keep doing things. You can't give up. I mean, and...
Oh, no.
I mean,
oh, no.
We are both, you know, ones that always say this to everybody, you know, and I mean, because this is really important. I mean, that's why I think what you've said today, I think they'll understand a lot more that they have to really like what they do. I don't know if there's somebody, there is somebody on the line. I don't know. Let me just see something if they wanted to talk.
Okay, sure.
Hello?
Hi,
is there a
Marcia,
question that you...
Jan.
Oh, it's Jan.
Jan.
Okay, did you want to ask a question? Hi.
Hi, yeah, you can put me on.
Okay, Jan, okay, this is
you're,
Jan.
You're on.
Yes, so
hi.
She's on. You're on. You're on.
How long have you been writing, Craig? When did you start writing?
You know, oddly enough, I've been in broadcast television, and I produced some shows. I had a show called PM Magazine. I was a producer, and I wrote for that. But I started writing screenplays 24 years ago.
Wow.
I didn't know the genre, so I had to learn it. I had to teach myself. But I've been writing scripts about 24 years now.
Wow.
I mean, that's, you know, I mean, but see, and that's, you know, over the years, he does a lot of screenwriting for other people. I mean, they give him, I mean, that's what happens in Hollywood, what he said before is true. They get an idea and they like it. And then that's why I tell people now, it's not every last word you say, though, because the problem is they're buying the script sometimes for the idea. And so someone like Craig will be rewriting it. And to make it what they want it to be, because everybody has their own idea of what their film should be. And so that's what you spend a lot of time doing that. I mean, and books.
Have you written a screenplay?
JD?
Are you talking to me?
Yeah.
Yeah, have you written?
No, I have.
I
basically write children's books. That's basically what I do.
Oh. Well,
have you thought about it? Have you thought about it, doing it?
I don't think my, you know, you were talking earlier about books being, not all books can be movies. Well, my children's books, basically, the ones I have, I don't believe would be.
Right.
So, no, I haven't thought about that. I have thought about it in the past, but I didn't think I was going to write. I'd rather write a book. I was more interested in holding a book.
Well, you know, I adapted a children's book once. I've adapted a couple, but one was from a lady in, I think she was in New England somewhere, and it was a very young children's book, very young. And I'd never tried that before, but you know what? It adapted very well because children's books have all the same things in them, except they're written for littler, you know, minds that aren't as experienced. And so what you can show more in a child's book when you write a screenplay. And that's what's fun, I think.
Do you know what people ask about this? Okay, this is very, because there's a lot of children's writers that we talk to. JD does a show with Virginia and I sometimes.
Yes.
And so, yeah. And so, you know, the thing is that when you're writing a children's, you know, everybody thinks their book can be animated. And they want it animated. Do you want to talk for just a few seconds before we're done about how the animation is? You know, why is it so hard to get anybody to buy a film?
It's very difficult, but you know what? It doesn't. You don't write it any differently,
exactly.
Really.
Exactly.
I did three books, a trilogy of children's books, kind of fantasy adventure books, that I wrote for live action, and yet the people who ended up being most interested were the animators. And I realize you do it exactly the same way. The characters have to be drawn. They have to be good. It's just it's like any story.
And it's just, and they have to make the decision if it's animated. See, if they like the script, they'll animate it.
It's cost more generally, but yeah.
Yeah. Because everybody, because I know a lot of people think this, and that's why, but one of the problems is, and I keep telling people all the time, it is really hard to get this done because they have in-house. Most of the children's movies are done by in-house.
A lot of the romantic comedies.
Yeah, I know. Well, the romantic comedies, hopefully, eventually, you know, because people really love romantic comedies. I mean, everybody. I mean, and, you know, I think that they've realized that there is an audience over 40, and they're surprising people that people are actually going to a lot of these movies now, and that's a good thing. I mean, when they did It's Complicated with Meryl Streep, I mean, that did very well.
Yep.
And
yeah, I enjoyed that movie. And, and I'm not an Alec Baldwin fan, and I really like that movie.
I'm not either.
But see, I like Alec Baldwin, but he doesn't think he's as good. I think he's very good. He doesn't even think he's that good.
Good.
Yeah, I think he's really good. You know, years ago I used to try to get into his production company because he had one years ago. So many people had them years ago, and they don't now because it's so hard to get, no matter who you are. It's impossible to get your movie out there. And that's why...
Well, look at
what you're... This is really... You're going on Hallmark tomorrow. Okay. And look it. It sounds really good, like you're going on Hallmark. This is so hard to get done. You know, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to have you. This is not easy. You did it.
You know, I was kind of surprised, actually. They've given it such a good slot. But, again, the target audience is there. And you'll see it there. It's mostly women, but it's a family. And there
well,
are...
I'm a fan. I watched Hallmark almost every night.
Oh, good.
I watch
I think a lot of women do, actually.
Yeah, and Lifetime, though. But the problem is, though, that, see, like Lifetime, it's not only a woman's station. I mean, that's, you know, that, see, a lot of times, as you know, you're not one of them, but men, they go like, oh, that's a chick flick, okay? And really, some of them aren't. You know that. You wrote a movie like that, chick flick.
Yeah.
I know. But, okay.
So true.
You know, and see, that's the thing. It's not, if they label it that, then if you get a man to watch it, he's like, he won't even tell his friends that he's watched it. He won't do anything, you know. And it's ridiculous because it's a good story, but a lot of times now in Lifetime, they have movies that are already made from other, you know, production companies. And
well,
there are men in it.
They have byproducts, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
I mean,
there are some really bad ones on there. My son was in one that and he even said, Dad, I didn't even want to give him my name. And he had a big part in it. It was a Lifetime movie, and it was, oh, God.
Well, because they, you know, they do it there, as you know, inexpensively. They try to, and they don't let you, you know, do certain things. You know, if it's a murder, you can't see this happening or that happening, and you miss a lot, you know. So that's, you know, a problem. But I'm sure tomorrow we're all going to be, you know, and I'll keep telling people about this because it's going to be a good movie. You have a great cast. Tess Harper, I mean, she's great.
Ed Herman was wonderful. Ed's the one that all started, you know, for me. He had asked for the script because
a
friend of his here in the film commission sent it to him. I didn't even know him. And he called me up, and I said, I can't afford you. And he said, yeah, you can. I want to do this. And he helped get Christy and Tess. And it was just wonderful.
See, that's what a lot of stars should do. They should do that. If they did that, we'd be in really good shape because then we'd have really good movies.
Well,
you hear
actors talk, and they're always looking for good material. And they have to sometimes, from what I've seen them talking, that they do have to go out and look for the stuff themselves. So that makes sense.
But the agents, like Craig knows that. Craig has a very good agent now, and she actually, you know, she, now that I'm not a good agent, but it's like, you know, I can't really promote my own things. And so, you know, and you've gotten work, good work, and she believes in you.
Well, and the thing is, too, is I tend to write stuff that, you know, the things that I do on television particularly is can't hurt your career.
Right.
And I can never afford to pay them what they get, but the trick is to write a script that's good enough that you attract them to the material.
Yeah.
And they're willing to take less because, first of all, it won't hurt their career. It can only help it. And they get to do something that they can actually show their grandchildren. That's what Ed said to me. He said, I've done things lately that I can't show my grandkids.
Look at
Ernie
Borgnine,
same way.
Look at Rue. You had Rue on. Rue, she passed away.
Rue was wonderful.
Oh, my God. She was great. Yeah. I mean, you've had a lot of stars in your movies. I mean,
I've been very fortunate.
You know, well,
and working with those people makes you better.
Yeah, I think knowing you has certainly helped me, and that's why I was so happy. I said, you're going to come on the show and talk about it, because I hope the movie does really well, and I think it will, because getting a lot of hits already.
From your mouth to God's ear, yeah.
Well, right, we always say that. I get years, you know, I hear myself sometimes talking about, with you, you know, because you had a family that you were very close with, and that matters in your writing.
It does.
And, you know, even in my new character, my Emelina, in my No Clues, No Shoes, it's, you know, because I did it in first person, because it's like she's got a grandmother, and I had one, you know what I mean, and her grandmother was guiding in her. So, I mean, that's what I know about her. She's a tough little girl, and she gets things done, you know, and she moves on.
I love first person, actually.
Yeah, because, I do, too, because you really get to know that person. You feel like
you become the person.
Yes.
Or they become
you. But that is a problem, though, for some writers, because sometimes you're writing something and you don't want them to think it's you. And it isn't actually you, you know. But people, you know, when people are reading things, you know, they think it might be you. But I hope you'll come on again, and you know,
I will
be I'll
happy
be talking to. And
I hope you enjoy the film.
There's no doubt that I will enjoy it. I've never not. All right, so good luck tomorrow, and thank you for coming
on.
And JD, thank you for coming.
Okay.
I knew it was somebody.
Thank
I knew the number. I was looking at it. I knew the number. All right,
and Craig,
thanks again.
Oh, you're welcome.
And
you're
thank
welcome.
You all for listening. And it'll be out there, Craig. So have a good show. Tomorrow will be great. Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. JD, are you still on?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Hi. All right. Okay, thank you for coming on. And I think Monday there's a show. Virginia has a show on Monday.
Okay.
Right? Does she have a show on Monday? I think I should say that. Virginia has a show on Monday, and I have a show on Tuesday. And you can always find it on, www.michiganavenuemedia.com, telling us, you know, telling you where what we're going to be having on. And because this was a surprise show I decided to do this week, so, and I'm so glad I did. So enjoy the movie, everybody, tomorrow, and I'll be talking about it on the air on Tuesday.
Maybe we can do a post-mortem. Okay,
No, that doesn't sound good, no.
No.
That's what you call it in the business.
I know that, but it's going to be a good movie. All right, good luck.
When
everybody.
We have previews, you know, and I send an audience in, I can't go in and watch it with them because I'm so sure it's going to be awful.
I know. You always say that, I know it's bad. I know that's what I say when someone's reading a script. I didn't want to stand with them. As soon as I see the red pen, I'm like nervous. I go, I have to move away.
I have to leave. Yeah.
I know.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks.
Take care. All right. Goodbye. All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.